now approaching. Junction at platform. Passengers, airport, please stay on board. Next stop, road station.
iOS helps you control which apps you share your exact location with. There's more to iPhone.
A lot can happen in 3 years, like a chatbot may be your new best friend. But what won't change? Needing health insurance. UnitedHealthcare Tri-Term Medical Plans, underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage that lasts nearly 3 years in some states. Learn more at uh1.com.
Welcome to the Game Podcast. I'm Gabriel Marcotti, and this week I'm joined by a full house. It's Patty Barkley, it's Tony Cascarino, and it's Stuart Robson. Today we'll be discussing Arsenal's defeat of plucky, lovable little Blackpool, and also West Brom's excellent win at Sunderland. We'll also be debating that sea of dead rubber that is the Champions League quarterfinals. Or is it? So please join us for the next 40 minutes or so. It'll be some of the best football conversation you'll hear from this media organization all week. I'm just so excited at the prospect of having three guests in the studio. Stuart, let's start with you. Blackpool and Arsenal, a sunny day. I'm told, I've only been to Blackpool once in my life. I'm told it's the kind of place you guys all enjoy going to for holiday and stuff. And it was actually sunny as well, which I'm not sure if it was supposed to be, if that's part of the Blackpool backdrop. But the important thing for Arsenal, and I can see you're all happy, is they got the win, they halt the slide, everything going swimmingly?
Not really. They got a victory, yes, they're quite right. But they were playing against a Blackpool team for the first 15 minutes. Blackpool pressed them, tried to play high up the field and caused Arsenal problems. But once Arsenal, which they have to earn the right to play, once they realised they had to play beyond Blackpool's midfield, the defending from Blackpool, I've got to say, is the worst I've ever seen in a Barclays Premier League game. The
You're two telling us how good Everett and Cathcart were all season long.
I've never said Everett and Cathcart are good defenders. They tried to play an offside line, which was suicidal. They didn't see danger. They can't run. It was embarrassing. If Arsenal had played the football they should have played and played beyond Blackpool's midfield, every time they got the ball, they could have won the game 8-9-0.
Cass, do you agree with this withering assessment of Blackpool's defenders?
Well, you can't disagree, can you? I mean, is it ironic they've conceded 66 goals this year, and every game I see them, I think it's going to be the Irish Premiership goal-scoring game of the day. Mm. I saw them at Fulham, and I've got to say, Blackpool stood off for them and they absolutely got battered. And if you let good players play, and Arsenal have a lot of good players, and Stuart was right, they did it for the first 20 minutes. But once they did concede, it could have been any score. And Arsenal did it at will. They've got to be harder to beat. They can get goals. They've got players like Adam and I think DJ Campbell and Taylor Fletcher. For me, they look like they've got players who can get a goal, but if you're going to have so many chances or give so many opportunities away to the opposition, you're going to end up losing too many games. And Blackpool have fallen into that trap. A little bit of confidence is being ebbed away from them. I just think that they've got to be harder to beat in the next few weeks if they've got any chance.
Paddy, Stuart said that they pressed high up the pitch,
yeah.
But then he also castigated them for keeping a high line.
Yes.
Yeah,
well,
you kind of have to be
Yes, I was wondering how those criticisms could be reconciled. But what's the question?
I was just giving you a chance to have a row with
Stuart. I wouldn't cross swords with him, but it seems to me that it's quite simple that Blackpool are a trade-off. I remember Swindon Town with John Gorman many years ago after they'd gone up under Hoddle, doing the same thing, just going out and playing football as if for enjoyment. Carlisle did the same thing when they overachieved many, many moons ago. Just came up and have fun. Tried to see how many goals they could score and hoped that there'd be fewer in their net.
It's not fun now, though, Paddy, is it? Because now it's turning into a bit of a disastrous run.
No, I don't think it is. They're always going to go down. Even if they were as well organised as you two pros would have them be, and I'm sure could make them tighter, they're still going to go down. So
you have to get the balance, Paddy, between attacking football and defensive football.
But if you've got one of the three worst sets of players in the league, if everyone's organised to the same level, and you've got one of the three worst sets
of
players...
It's the worst set of players in the league.
Well, yes, possibly. Yeah, possibly. Then you're going to go down anyway. So go down playing great football. And I don't think Blackpool, if they are relegated, will feel it's been a bad season. I hope they don't, because they've helped to make it a good season for me as a neutral.
But there's a contradiction of saying pressing the ball, and the two centre halves trying to play a high line, because I always think if you press the ball, and Barcelona do it really well, but the one area that people are going to play is in behind you. If you press the ball high up, they're going to play it in behind you. So your centre-halves need to be on the half-turn, ready to defend the space behind them. Also ready to go and close the ball down if it goes into the centre-forward. But Blackpool yesterday were trying to step up for offside when they were trying to do it in half a pitch. And Cesc Fabregas had time on the ball. Van Persie was spinning into space. His midfield players were running forward. You cannot defend like that. It's impossible to defend properly if you're trying to gamble on offsides time and time again.
I also kind of feel that... and we will move on from Blackpool, please, fans of the Big Four. We'll do that in just a minute. I know he's a wonderfully skilled player, and some people have him as a player of the year. But I also think Charlie Adam, to me, is just a very static player when he doesn't have the ball. And we can say, oh, that's fine, you know, he's a skilled player. But I think for a team like Blackpool, you know, you're kind of, when you don't have the ball, you're basically carrying a passenger, and you can't do without him because he's 80% of your you know, attacking prowess. But
they can be sometimes. I mean, I remember watching Andy Reid at Charlton and at Sunderland, and fantastic on the ball. He'll be creative for you, and Charlie Adam is that. He, when they've got the ball, he's always got an option. He can find a path. The moment people get beyond you, and Stuart touched on it, when they get at your back four and you're trying to close up, teams who've got good players who get their head up will find a pass really quickly, and they'll do it quick. The third goal of Arsenal was just into Fabregas really quickly. He just flicks it on, helps it, and it takes the whole of the Blackpool back line out with one pass, and that's where they're falling down.
But
for
even, you even look at the positions that the Blackpool defenders were taking up. Walcott is standing in behind Craney. The problem Blackpool also have, they're asking Craney to get forward and get crosses in. They're asking Baptiste to get crosses in. Now, when you have that, you usually have two holding midfield players that are willing to get back out into the fullback areas to cover those spaces, but they don't even have that. So Craney, I mean, how much work they've had to do over this season must be amazing. They've got forward high pace, then they're running back at high pace. He just can't do it.
Just moving on, Ollie, another member of the shaven-headed fraternity here, was kind of on the warpath after the game. I mean, Koscielny on Taylor Fletcher could have been a penalty. And then this bizarre refereeing, I thought, with the goal where, you know, if you could argue that if he hadn't scored, then Jens Lehmann could have been sent off. It was Stuart. Do you want to describe the situation with the Blackpool goal?
Well, the Blackpool goal. First of all, you talked about bad defending. Arsenal played very square. No one pressed the ball. They played the ball in between them, and the player goes on the run in between the fullback and the centre half. Lehmann comes out. The ball's taken past Lehmann. He brings the player down in the area, and Blackpool. The ball goes to Taylor Fletcher. He puts it in the other side. And I don't think the referee did anything to Lehmann, did he? First of all, he went back to book Jack Wilshere on the halfway line for a tackle that he'd made where he tried to stop the move.
He booked the Englishman instead of the German.
Exactly. And, I think Jens Lehmann got away with it. Arsenal got away with it. And they also got away with the penalty decision as well, because Taylor Fletcher actually had quite a decent game. And I didn't think he had as much skill as he showed yesterday. They ran at Arsenal's back four. Koscielny came out. He played a little square ball. And Koscielny clattered into him. It should have been a penalty.
But what got me too about that was if he hadn't scored...
Lehmann would have to go.
And they would get a penalty.
Yes. I don't agree with the rule, right. But that would, under the current laws, he would have had to be sent off because it was a goal-scoring opportunity and a penalty.
What's so amazing, and we've touched on there, and I get really frustrated with Arsenal. There was a couple of incidences. They just fall down. Gal Cliche, who's done it probably half a dozen times this year, gets caught on the ball with a real suicide pass or attempt to pass in a really bad area. And Arsenal are there for the taking defensively. They really are at times. They will give you chances. And they've survived a couple of nervy moments where, again, they could have easily won 3 or 4.
Moving on, big news at Arsenal. Silent Stan Kroenke is upping his stake. He's buying shares from Danny Fisman and Lady Nina Bracewell. take a step back for those who don't know or have or have forgotten the story. Yeah. Yeah. But basically, Arsenal's ownership is very diffuse. Yeah. You've got all these old school blue blood types like Danny Fisman, like Lady Nina.
Nina Bracewell and Smith, by the way, is the Everton midfield of the mid 80s.
Yeah. Thank you. Like this other man named Sir Chips, who I'm sure is a close personal friend of Stewart's. And then a few years ago, when things started going a bit funny, they had to they brought in other investment. One of those people who bought it is a man named Alisher Usmanov, who I think it's safe to say is not very much liked by the people who run Arsenal. And so they went and they brought in Stan Kroenke, who is married to the Walmart heiress, among other things, and is a very wealthy man in his own right. So the long and short of it is, and I'm sorry about this digression, but there are people out there who don't know, is that Stan Kroenke now looks like he's going to buy the club.
You got there.
I got there.
Did you just repeat that?
Hey, Stuart, Stan Kroenke, he owns several teams in the United States. Yeah. He's known as Silent Stan because he's got no charisma whatsoever. Which maybe you don't need if you're an owner. Not everybody can be as lovable and exciting as Sheikh Mansour. But what?
Or indeed the Glazer family.
Or the Glazer family. There you go. See, our owners are like Mr. Berlusconi. We're a lot better than that.
German are like referees. The best ones are the ones you never notice.
Oh yes.
No. I just made that up.
Okay, good, because that's silly, because as Silvio Berlusconi keeps repeating on a daily basis, he has won more trophies than any other owner in history, and you certainly do notice him, especially when he's wearing his heels.
And Alfaia's done well as well, and he's very high profile.
Yes. Of course, Alfaia, I think, has won about as much as Cascarino has in terms of trophies. But
I think he's been to the Europa League final as often as Cas has, at least.
Have you ever been to Europa League final?
No.
As a fan, help me out here.
I've been there as a fan.
All right, let's move on here. The point of Kroenke is your reputation, certainly in the United States, is being extremely cheap and stingy. Basically, like Walmart, effectively.
Or Arsenal.
Or indeed, as Patty says, the Arsenal of recent years, although Wenger says that's not the case because he's got wads and wads of money, just doesn't spend it. Patty, this strikes me as kind of consolidation, and not much is going to change here. If anything, money's going to get even tighter.
Yeah, I don't think it's going to change very much. Arsenal are already behaving as if financial fair play were in operation, very wisely, in my opinion. I think this guy sounds like a safe pair of hands to me. I mean,
he's criticized, for example, just for those to give you an idea, in the NBA, he owns the Denver Nuggets. There's a salary cap. There's a limit what you can spend. He's way under the salary cap, to the point that they actually have to have a salary floor as well. Like, you have to spend a certain amount of money to make your team semi-competitive. And he gets, and he's been hammered for that by the fans. He owns a hockey team, which is kind of a running joke in the sense that just because it's the same arena, which he also happens to own, it's like, I'll put a hockey team in there so I can fill the non-basketball. Yep. I mean, that's the criticism.
There is an obvious. I know what you're getting at. Will he buy
Harlequins to have him play at the Emirates when Arsenal are away?
No, I think there's far greater danger, which is that he's buying it to sell it to Usmanov. And
really? You think this is a real risk?
Yes, I do. I don't think Usmanov's playing. Usmanov's a very wealthy man, and his interest in Arsenal is casual. And I think it's possible that quite a lot of the owners, even including the Fenway Sports Group, are buying, who picked up Liverpool for a very good price in the so-called scam of the century, as the previous owners said. I think that there is a chance now, with financial fair play coming in, that the valuations of football clubs will go through the roof. And I think
it's big clubs.
I think it is quite possible. Yes, absolutely. I think it's quite possible that if put it this way, if I were Kroenke, I would certainly be. That would certainly be one of my strategies.
Stuart, your take on it? Why does Paddy describe Usmanov as a risk?
I'm not quite sure. I don't really follow the boardroom going on at Arsenal, to be honest. The big question is, how will it affect Arsene Wenger? That's what the supporters want to know. Will more money be put into the transfer kitty? Because that's the criticism everyone has of Arsene Wenger. Although there's more criticism of Arsene Wenger's tactical nous these days than there ever was before. I mean, at the moment, the only people that are unhappy are the fans, because all the shareholders are very happy because Arsenal are getting 70,000 or 60,000 people in there every week. They have the biggest income on a match day. The board can't be happier with Arsene Wenger at the moment. They're not worried about winning things at the moment. They're getting lots of money.
Cass, so if there is some future universe where every club is going to be breaking even and everything, we all agree Arsenal will be the best place to do that, and it doesn't really matter if Stan Kroenke's in charge or Stan Laurel, because the key thing is that they'll have a lot of money to spend because they're a very profitable club. So that being the case, if you were an Arsenal fan, would it really matter?
Yeah, Arsenal have got a stadium that's as good, if not the best, in the country. They've got 60,000 watching me each week. The boys touched on the sort of revenue they're making, and with relatively not big spending compared to teams around them. The football club is a big business, and I've been involved. We've all been involved a long time. I've always saw profits as being taxable. I can remember when I first joined Aston Villa and they paid 1.2 million. And I remember having a chat with Graham Taylor and he said, well, the chairman needs to buy a player or two because this money's going to go on tax if we have a profit. So clubs making money isn't either here nor there, really. Because if they can go and buy a player and it's less tax for them to pay and it's a better player coming to the club, that's going to happen in football. And I don't see that differing in the future. So clubs making money is not really, really a big issue. What is a big issue for me comes down to Arsene Wenger's at a crossroads, because there is a little bit ill feeling towards where the club and being second and what direction are they taking. He's at a crossroads where if he doesn't do big business in the summer and excite fans, I'm not sure the Emirates will be full with 60,000, not just say next year, but the year after. Because you have to be successful in football or add to what you're doing on a regular basis. I think he's got to spend and excite the fans that come there on a regular basis, because they also are aware, with a little bit of big business, Arsenal, I think, would have won the league. I really believe that. I think the league was there for them, and I think they're going to look back, and certain individuals they could have added to their squad would have made a massive difference.
They haven't lost
there.
It yet.
No. Yeah, I think what the big thing for me, Stuart, and all of us here, is that I don't see them winning it. And if I come back at the end of the season, they have, I would more look at the failing of probably
Arsenal
other teams in the match you're going to win it.
Manchester United are going to have to do a Devon lock now to make that possible.
Sunderland and West Brom. Yeah. Now, we were originally scheduled to have Tony Evans on the show, and I was hoping to set up another Barkley v. Evans situation, because I felt that, Paddy, you were at a disadvantage earlier this year when the subject was Hodgson at Liverpool.
Yes.
But now the shoe's on the other foot, and you could have gotten
The shoe was only on the wrong foot for a very short period, but I was amazingly comfortable throughout that experience. but it is a shame Tony's not here. I would have loved to have had a chat with him last week when West Bromwich beat Liverpool as well. But you don't always get what you want in the world of podcasts. But
if you try, sometimes you'll get what you need.
Yes. the thing is, Hodgson always has been, during his career, always been a good manager, always will be. The chemistry was, in my opinion, hideously wrong at Liverpool. But he's just... What I find impressive is that what you find sometimes with managers who have really wounding experiences, and often that is being manager of England, they take a while to recover. I remember Graham Taylor, excellent manager though he had been before, and excellent manager though he proved afterwards. Took a long time to recover from the England experience. And I thought that Hodgson's experience at Liverpool would turn him against the game, would give him terrible self-doubt. Far from it. He's just taken up where he left off. And West Bromwich now are still playing all the beautiful football that they played under Di Matteo, but defending well as well. And it's interesting, you were talking before about Charlie Adam, and I was thinking, but look at Brunt. who's the most creative player at West Bromwich Albion. But he's all over the field. He's, in my opinion, he's been outstanding this season.
Stuart, was it a case that, I mean, as Paddy said, that it's better chemistry and that maybe he's more suited to working with this type of these types of players? And by these types of players, I don't mean bad players, but I mean players.
He could manage Manchester United. He just couldn't manage Liverpool.
Yeah,
of the special circumstances.
But no, but beyond the special circumstances, is it also that, you know, this was a team that was built with, I mean, there's a lot of technical ability in this side that, you know, maybe under Robbie Dee, even though I personally think he was unlucky to have been sacked, but, you know, was a good team with gifted players who maybe were more likely to look up to somebody like Roy Hodgson and put their faith in him more so than the people at Liverpool.
Well, I think it's if you're going into manage a football club, you need to be wanted. And if you're not wanted, and the fans obviously didn't want him because they wanted Kenny Dalglish, and Kenny Dalglish being above him at the club was a real problem for him. And because as soon as they lost a couple of games, and that's why when Arsene Wenger goes, when Alex Ferguson goes, you can't keep them on as director of football or anything like that, because they will always, as soon as they lose a couple of games, everyone will say, well, Arsene Wenger would have done it this way and Alex Ferguson would have done it that way. Mm. And that's what they were always saying, bring Kenny Dalglish back in. I think Hodgson's a good manager. He's a good organiser of teams. He didn't get the best out of the Liverpool players, but I'm not sure the Liverpool players wanted to be got the best out of themselves. I still believe that until Steven Gerrard is not at the football club, until Jamie Carragher to a certain degree is not at the football club, Liverpool won't win anything.
Yeah.
I think they run
given that Jamie Carragher is rumoured to be moving into coaching soon, then what you're saying is some kind of death sentence on Liverpool Football Club,
until
the Liver Bird is gone, they'll never...
and Jamie Carragher's place, right. Because whenever...
The train is now approaching junction at platform. Passengers, airport, please stay on board. Next stop, Road Station.
iOS helps you control which apps you share your exact location with. There's more to iPhone.
Quality sleep is essential. That's why the Sleep Number Smart Bed is designed for your ever-evolving sleep needs. Need a bed that's firmer or softer on either side? Helps you sleep at a comfortable temperature? Sleep Number Smart Beds let you individualize your comfort, so you sleep better together. J.D. Power ranks Sleep Number number one in customer satisfaction with mattresses purchased in-store. And now, save 50% on the Sleep Number Limited Edition smart bed for a limited time. For J.D. Power 2023 award information, visit jdpower.com/awards. Only at a Sleep Number store or sleepnumber.com.
One size fits all seemed like a good idea for clothes.
Nice dress. It's a t-shirt.
Until you tried it on. Same goes for your healthcare. That's why United Healthcare offers a variety of flexible, budget-friendly coverage for medical, vision, dental, and more. So whether you're between jobs, coming off a parent's plan, or even missed open enrollment, you can find the plan that fits you best. Find out more about United Healthcare coverage at uh1.com. That's uh1.com.
There's a problem. Everyone goes, oh, well, Steven Gerrard and Carragher, the only ones playing. I bet they're not good with some of the foreign players in the dressing room. I bet they're not bullies, that's the wrong word, but I bet they put some of the foreign players down, don't make them feel particularly welcome.
It would be different if I completely agree with that analysis, for what it's worth. And I think it would be different if Jamie Carragher went away, became a successful manager of Tranmere, and then came back to Liverpool as manager. That would be completely different. But at the moment, he's running... influencing the club in a way in which he's no business to be. If he's the manager, he's supposed to be influencing the club. I think he will be an excellent manager, and possibly for Liverpool, but he shouldn't be managing the club from the middle of the defence.
Okay, Cass, and I apologise for this digression towards Liverpool, even when we don't have the usual Liverpool fans here, we seem to be drawn back to Merseyside. But I wanted to ask you, Steve Bruce, I'm sure in your career, he's probably kicked you a few times while he tackled you.
It was the same club as him.
What?
Gillingham. gap. Mm. Started my career. Me and Steve.
You never saw that team?
That, a bit before my time.
Yeah, but me and Brucey. Yeah, his missus made me breakfast one morning and brought it down when I stayed over. He's in his house and made me very welcome.
Was he there?
Yeah, he was there. And he ate a breakfast that Red Rum wouldn't have jumped. It was massive.
Was he playing midfield?
He wasn't really a centre half, but he could do. Yeah, he could do. He's very good on the ball, Paddy. Yeah.
which sets me up to my question. You know, fast forward to the future. You know, his nose is a little more out of shape. He's put on a few pounds. I think we all have.
He's out with the pies. Yeah.
This Sunderland team—they haven't won a game since January 22nd. You know, we had Culkin on, and he says, "Oh, but the injuries." Well, you know what? All those injuries—it's pretty much done. He has a big squad. You know, most of these guys are fit now. Darren Bent's gone, but they got a lot of money for him. I think most of us believed it was good business at the time. Well, what's the problem? Why are Sunderland so terrible? I mean, he could be sucked into the relegation battle. Yeah.
Well, they had a period, didn't they? Gian, Welbeck and Bent all looking really lively, looking like it goals, and he could even afford to leave one of them out in any particular game. They had the amazing result at Chelsea 3-0 that, you know, just everyone was shocked by it, rightly so.
Could have been six?
Yeah, it could have been more. And Steve's team defended very, very well, certainly in the opening part of the season. They were very good, strong defensively. I saw the game against Man City, and it was quite funny. Before the game, I said, you know what? The Guyanian boys have all played brilliantly against England, and they're all three of them were playing for Sunderland, and I weren't sure how Gian was going to be at Man City after he played so well against England. And I thought it was going to be a horrendous night for them. There's been a little bit of lack of belief in them since, you know, Bent went. You're going to lose goals. Without doubt, you're going to lose goals if you let Bent go. And then from there, Gian is not really a goal scorer. I think he's a guy that goes all over the place. He'll work hard and he'll be creative. Welbeck was injured, come back. And I think Fraser Campbell. So they've lost quite a bit. But with that, they're making individual mistakes. And Steve Bruce has touched on it. If you're going to be, you know, we touched on Blackpool earlier in the day. If you're going to be conceding goals on a regular basis, it doesn't half make your job harder, especially as you've lost forwards as well. So I think he's found it. It's a situation, I bet he just can't wait to get to the end of the season. Get to the end of the season.
I get the sense Cass has quite a bit of sympathy for his former breakfast mate, Steve Bruce. Exactly. So you're not giving him a pass
When it comes to managers, I always say good managers, or I think good managers are the ones where they might win a couple, then they lose one, and they, you know, when they're with an average team, because it shows me that they're when they're doing well, when they're doing poorly, or they have a poor game, they stay on the same focus, they still keep going the same way. Steve Bruce, there's a lot of managers. Bobby Gould was one. When they're winning, everything's great. Oh, yeah. We're all great. We're all brilliant. And as soon as they lose a couple, everyone's rubbish. Everywhere and training, he's miserable in training, and the players get that feel as well, and you go on a long run. I've watched them play right at the start of the season. I thought they looked a good side. They had a settled side and they had a settled style of playing.
That's a great point about the settled, because it seems like he's fiddling with his team every single week.
Something had to be done.
Elmer Hammondy on the right side of midfield. He had Barnsley at left back, who was doing really well. He had Mal Bronk playing in the hole behind two strikers. He had Henderson and Katamo. Well, you can't have a settled side with Katamo anywhere near it, because he's always suspended. And they had Welbeck and Bent were up front at the time. Welbeck played on the left-hand side, coming in field. And I thought their shape, the way they defended, was excellent. I went to see them in recent weeks, and I'm not sure what they're trying to do. And that's when I worry about a manager's ability to coach a team, when you can't see what their game plan is. And I can't see what Sunderland's game plan is at the moment.
I'm biased. I love the Champions League. I think when UEFA created the Champions League, I thought it was a stroke of genius, and I think it's good for the game. But we're not debating that right now, but we're debating.
I did hear you. I've heard you a lot of times humming the anthem.
Exactly.
Which is a giveaway.
Exactly. And I know all the words, too. Now, the only thing is, quarterfinals last week, we like sort of delicately poised quarterfinals, and yet three of the four look pretty much like dead rubbers. And the other one, the one that's, you know, ooh, look, it's the most uncertain one, it still involves Manchester United having won away to Chelsea. And I might add, Manchester United, to my knowledge, have never lost, have never been knocked out of European competition after winning the first leg away from home. So Chelsea would have to make history in that regard. is this just like a freak occurrence?
Yeah,
that they're so unbalanced.
It's not just that. It's the final is Barcelona Manchester United. I'll tell you now. And Cass, you're a betting man. What odds would you give me that against it being a Manchester United Barcelona final? It's there.
Well,
we know, and we haven't even had the second leg of the quarters yet.
Yeah, well, Barcelona are standout favourites, and they obviously can't meet. You're probably looking around to 2-1, 5-2 max.
Yeah, there you are. I mean, that's extraordinary. That's extraordinary.
By the way, have you looked at previous years to see if this is a one-off? This particular year, three of the quarterfinals are so.
Yeah, it is a one-off.
One-sided. That's why I say this year I think is just one of them rare occasions that there's been some massive victories in the first legs.
Mm. And I think also one of those unbalanced games was a remarkable upset as well.
Mm. Inter.
You know, Inter against Schalke.
But again, Inter defensively have been shocking in recent weeks. Yeah. I saw them against AC Milan, I saw them against Schalke. You know, they've got players that I don't think are good enough. They don't read danger, they don't see situations. They've got Inter Milan have gone from the best defensive team in Europe last year. One of the worst, and that's because of the coach.
I think the other unforgivable thing he did, and this I thought was really bad, was, you know, you're right. So you've thrown the game away. It's 2-2. You go goal down to 3-2. Why don't you stop and remember that it's the first leg of a two-legged quarterfinal, that you've won away from home against Bayern Munich, that you're playing Schalke, who are not a good team at all, and that if it's not working for you tonight, you don't need to go and win this game right there. Because I think that's what killed them. It's just two stupid goals that they gave up on the break.
It wouldn't have been a great result, but it wouldn't have been such a bad
3-2.
Result.
They can go to Gelsenkirchen and win 2-0, no problem. Mm-hmm. But now they have to win 4-0, which just ain't going to happen. Mm. Look at the other ones, and I'm sorry about the Leonardo Thon here. Spurs, I kind of feel like Real Madrid, I'm pretty convinced Real Madrid are the second best team in the world. I think it's a Martina Navratilova, Chris Evert situation, where Martina's a lot better than Chrissy, but Chrissy's much better than everybody else. Mm. Somebody said that, but that was a sickening opinion on my part recently, but. Am I wrong? I mean, is this 4-0 over Spurs just par for the course?
I saw the game Real Madrid against Spurs. They didn't look impressive. I was thinking about your opinion all through the game, actually. But no, Real Madrid technically weren't brilliant against Spurs. Well, I'll tell you what they were. They were the hardest working Real Madrid team I have ever seen in my life.
Are you surprised?
I have been watching, not in the slightest. I'm not.
Are you surprised they look a better team?
Yeah. Well, I mean, if you're quite good and you work like a demon, you're going to slaughter anybody on a regular basis.
When you look at this playing squad, you chuck in the manager.
Yeah, phenomenal.
I mean, it's kind of a mismatch.
Yeah, it is. And I mean, I watching the first game, I mean, Real Madrid for 45 minutes were pretty mediocre. Without really get their noses in front, get a player sent off. Second half, 10 men, Tottenham, and they really struggled. You know, apart from all their stars, Adebayor up against Gallas was a mismatch. Because Adebayor, it was that typical one, being at the same club, he probably knows he can outrun Gallas, he knows he can outjump him, and he did exactly that. Do you know what really disappointed me in that game was that Michael Dawson, who's now become an England player, wasn't saying to Gallas, let me have a go at him. In our day, I'm sure, I know it's going back, Tony Adams might have said to, I don't know, Dave O'Leary or whoever, I'll take him. That never happened once. The whole night, Adebayor just got on Gallas.
Am I right? Genus was marking for the corner.
I didn't play professional football like you gentlemen. I would have thought that you have a manager who gets paid a lot of money to do marking assignments on set pieces.
And yeah, you do.
Regarding
your
Adams, David O'Leary one, Adams is 6'5", O'Leary's a midget, so yes, I could see that.
Yeah, well, sometimes in games, if your mate's getting dominated and you think, I'll have a go
Who is
Dawson, got to take responsibility
Who is Dawson picking up in the first place?
They only had Adebayor.
This is why you'll always have the argument between zonal marking and man marking.
You know, I just go back to the initial point was Michael Dawson has to take responsibility, taking out Adebayor. And yes, you're right, the corner, Genius ends up picking up Adebayor. Now, that's got to come from the sidelines as well.
Yeah.
The coaches have got to be able to spot that what was happening out there was that William Gallas got the absolute pants ripped off him by Adebayor. He bullied him. He took him. He dragged him around. Okay, he wasn't fit before the game. Well, that's no good to you, is it?
No. Anybody think Spurs can overturn the result?
No.
Okay, that's easy there. Barcelona and Shakhtar Donetsk, I've been talking about Mircea Lucescu. It was kind of romantic notion that, you know, they do have the great home record, although their incredible home record, their streak has now been broken as well. So again, Shakhtar, no shot.
Despite the fact that they've got the leading goal scorer in the Champions League, in Eduardo, no.
He's been leading goal scorers. Leo Messi.
Per minute. Is Eduardo.
It's one of those goofy statistics. That,
no, it's not. I'll tell you, may I just briefly say this? I think that goal scoring statistics are a disgrace to journalism. Because if you have cricket, you have the bowling and batting averages. They relate to the number of balls faced or bowled. In football, you just tell the number of goals. You don't even distinguish with penalties or games played or anything like that. And I just felt like saying that.
I bet Chicharito agrees with you, by the way. And so does Mario Balotelli.
Yep, well, there you are then. And if those two agree with me, I'm very comfortable with my opinion.
Just as an aside about goal-scoring statistics, Leo Messi has scored two goals this week, and we should mention this. He has equaled the record for goals in a season for a player based in Spain, equaling the mark set by Ferenc Puskas, the original Ronaldo in that magical season with Barcelona, and, of course, Messi himself, who had the mark last year. As I reckon it, he's got between 9 and 12 games left this season. Mm-hmm. So you assume he will definitely break the record. And the really creepy thing is that he's just 23 years old. Mm-hmm. But if the 6 years he's had so far as a professional, if he repeats that in the next 6 years, he will be the all-time leading scorer in Spanish football before his 29th birthday. I mean, this is how disturbingly good Leo Messi is. And sometimes it's good, I think, to take a step back and appreciate that. Chelsea United, or United Chelsea, I should say, that is the uncertain semifinal. Somebody want to make a case of why Chelsea will go through or what Chelsea need to do to go through? Stuart.
Go on.
Well, I think they've got to play quite directly. I think he's got to go back to a system that suits the players. They've got to. Alex Ferguson said he set his team up to play against Chelsea, who were going to overload the midfield. Well, Chelsea didn't actually overload their midfield against Manchester United, and that's the one area where I think you can dominate Manchester United. I don't think they defend very well in midfield.
No.
Giggs defended brilliantly on the night, and so did Park on that left-hand side. But I think you can get at Carrick, you can get at Giggs, you can get at Scholes if he plays. They're the area. Anderson, whoever. I don't think they're a good defensive team.
I mean, Scholes, if you go at them, Scholes, Vidic for me is the most overrated player I've ever seen in my life.
Ever?
Yes. And I remember, I mean, Chelsea have got Fernando Torres in the squad for Tuesday. You remember what Torres has done to Vidic?
Over the years? He hasn't done that to too many players in recent times, has he?
I think it was a different Torres.
Scholes can't walk on a pitch without picking up a yellow card. If Chelsea really go at players like that, they can get Manchester United won't finish with 11 on the field.
I disagree with Paddy there on Vidic. I think, you know, he's had Ferdinand for parts of the season, Smalling alongside him, and I think both have played exceptionally well. And he lives on the edge. I think he's that type of defender. But I think, you know, if you were to pick a centre half who's had as good a year as anybody, I would put him definitely at the forefront of that. Can they be beaten? I think no accommodating from Ancelotti. Don't think if you start accommodating in football and playing players that you know are not complementing what you're trying to do, and I think he's accommodated too many. He's trying to reshuffle a pack to maybe it's Torres that has to come out of the team. Maybe it is Drogba. Yeah. Whoever, you just pick the side that we said, everybody's going to know their job. They won their Old Trafford in the league. They can do it. Man United are beatable. I think we're all pretty much in agreement in that. But they've got to get it all spot on. Yeah. And they can't be out of shape They have to be absolutely spot on the way they're going to attempt the game. And I do think Benny Ayoum is the one player, if I had to add a little bit of trickery into their team, he was one player, maybe not to start, that certainly could give United something different to think about. Maybe not wide, maybe central midfield, because what Stuart and Paddy touched on, the midfield weaknesses of United defending, he's the type of guy that could unravel the play to set Chelsea up.
Yeah, if they pick a team with one centre forward, and I don't care which of the two it is, if you like, the one centre forward to play the part of Lineker or Rush, and Ben Ayoun to play the part of Beardsley, if you see what I mean, you know, the one striker in front of the other, and really go at Manchester United, I think they can turn it over.
You had to go a long way back there, Paddy, didn't you, to find that combination?
Well, it's just, Ben Ayoun reminds me of Beardsley.
He can get a goal, he can find a pass, and he's a clever player.
They have to dominate midfield. That's the area they've got to get mentioned. Dominate that midfield area,
get
run
players
the game from
beyond
there.
But they have
the
got,
midfield.
There is if you look at the squads man for man and say, now pick 11 out of that, out of Chelsea, and pick 11 out of Manchester United, you'd say, well, Chelsea are slightly better.
And one thing just on that, Gab, is that the game that when AC Milan lost at home against Tottenham, and you could see the difference of the effect of Tottenham having an away victory, that they were quite negative in their approach at White Hart Lane. You know, what sort of approach are United got? They only know, for me, one way to play. And if this game's hanging in the edge, I think you'll see an edginess about Man United.
We've all said how we think it can be done. Having said that, I don't think it will happen. Because I don't think at Chelsea at the moment that there is the structure there. I don't think Ancelotti's been put under impossible pressure, and I don't think he's managing as well as he could be.
Well, Carlo, these three wise men told you how you go and get past Manchester United. The question is, will you follow their advice or will you follow your
advice
own advice
from above?
That was the cheeky Paddy Barkley. He's been identified. How about some quick hits? Sir Alex makes a million changes to his lineup, but Fulham are nevertheless swept away. Paddy, this one's easy to answer. For somebody who's written a successful biography of him anyway, how does he do it?
Available from all good Amazons. I only wrote 100,000 words on him. I don't know. Somebody said genius is the infinite capacity for taking pains. No manager in the history of the game has worked as hard or has applied intelligence for as long and with such ferocity as Sir Alex Ferguson. He just basically knows so much. That's the answer.
The big brain of Fergie. Chelsea have a stinker, but nevertheless get past Wigan at 1-0. Stuart, were there minds on the Champions League, or is there a deeper issue?
Probably were on the Champions League, but there is a deeper issue. I think Chelsea, ever since they beat Arsenal 2-1 at home when they played very defensive football and tried to play on the counter-attack, since then they haven't been able to raise the game. When they've needed to lift their game up to another level, another tempo, they've struggled to do so. If you play at one level and you play with complacency for a length of time, when you try and build it up, it always goes wrong. They've played the wrong formation in recent times. They've had a front player that doesn't look as though he's going to score goals that's cost £50 million. There's deeper issues at Chelsea.
Wolves needed a result against Everton. Instead, they got a hammering. Thankfully, given how tight it is in the bottom half of the table, they can still get out of it. Cass, what does your fellow born and bred Irishman Mick McCarthy need to do?
Well, sadly, the first 20 minutes against Everton, they played really well, and he went ambitious. He went with two up front, Blake and also Fletcher, and they looked like they were going to win the game and end up getting beat 3-0. For me, how are they going to change it? I think they have to keep their work rate. The loss of Doyle's massive for Wolves. He's fundamental to how they play. Mick's got to find an answer. Oh, sorry, I knew my phone was going to go. Sorry.
Okay, Gavin, now one for you. I thought Louis van Gaal was going to stick around at Bayern until the end of the season. Now apparently he's been sacked. What's going on there?
What's going on there is that Bayern have just, I think, completely dropped the ball. They sacked van Gaal at the weekend. Uli Hoeneß had a very angry conversation. This is what you call a long and painful divorce. Divorce is never pretty, but if it does happen, it should happen quickly. And the point is, van Gaal probably should have gone in September. Some people might say he should have never been appointed. Instead, they've dragged this out forever. There's too many big egos, too many volatile minds in the room. Van Gaal's going to go. And by the way, since people are wondering, like, oh, is he going to go manage Liverpool? Is he going to Newcastle? No, Van Gaal's going nowhere. He's going to take a year off and then maybe a sanatorium. I'm not sure. That's all we've got time for today, but thank you for choosing to spend your time with us. We know you have options. And remember, you can go to www.thetimes.co.uk for all your news, your gossip, your analysis, and also our web chats. Mine is on Mondays. Paddy's, yours is on
Tuesday.
Fantastic. Paddy on Tuesday, and you can also catch Ollie Kay and Graham Spears later in the week. Many of us are on Twitter. Follow us there. Shall we do this next week? Why not? Catch you next time.
As you're listening to me, Daisy, Apple's iPhone disassembly robot, is dismantling an iPhone into lots of recyclable parts. That's how Apple recovers more materials than conventional recycling methods. Thanks, Daisy. There's more to iPhone.
Rising sea levels, extreme weather patterns, extinctions of species. Our planet needs protecting. I'm Adam Vaughan, the environment editor for The Times, and this is Planet Hope from The Times, in partnership with Rolex and its Perpetual Planet Initiative. In this podcast, we hear from leading experts from around the world who are committed to finding solutions. These explorers, scientists, entrepreneurs, and citizens are committed to a common goal: to protect our home, Earth. Listen now wherever you get your podcasts.